On the morning of April 26, 1986, Europe witnessed the worst nuclear accident in history, the explosion of a reactor at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Soviet Ukraine. The disaster put the world on the brink of nuclear annihilation. While less than 5% of the reactor's fuel escaped, dozens died of radiation poisoning, fallout contaminated half the continent, and thousands fell ill in the years and decades that followed. In his new book, Chernobyl, The History of a Nuclear Catastrophe, historian Serhiy Plohy tells the dramatic stories of the firefighters, scientists, engineers, workers, soldiers, and policemen who found themselves caught in a nuclear Armageddon and heroically extinguished the inferno. Drawing on new sources, including recently released documents from the KGB archives in Ukraine that haven't yet been translated into English, he sheds light on the origins of the disaster, showing how warning signs were ignored at almost every level of command. Serhiy Plohy is a professor of Ukrainian history and director of the Ukrainian Research Institute at Harvard University. Again, the name of the new book is Chernobyl, The History of a Nuclear Catastrophe, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Serhiy Plohy to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us once again. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Given that this is part of this is a personal story, what brought you to want to look at the history of Chernobyl and this catastrophe?
Well, when the disaster happened and the explosion took place on April 26, 1986, I at that time lived on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain. I lived in the Soviet Union, more specifically in Ukraine. And what happened then really affected me, my friends, my family. I remember, again, I had small children at that time. We had to keep them indoors in our apartment for the entire summer. So being afraid of the Chernobyl fallout and rain and things like that. So for me, that was very much a personal story. But given that the Soviet government was engaged in cover-up, that the information was not available, for me now it was a special thrill to go back to the archives and find the materials, the documents, to figure out how that was happening, what was happening, what the government knew, what did it allow us to know. So it was a very interesting journey, both as a for a historian and for just me as a human being.
So when it comes to Chernobyl, tell us what happened ultimately. What was going on at this plant, and then ultimately what occurred to cause such a catastrophe?
Well, the entire Soviet industry was under a lot of pressure to produce, to meet the production targets. A few weeks, really, before the explosion, the next party congress took place, which was the first one for Mikhail Gorbachev. And they decided to more than double the construction of the reactors, nuclear reactors, in the Soviet Union in the course of the next 5 years. So that was one thing. Another was that the reactor that they were using, it was inherently not safe. And then they were cutting corners in terms of safety. They were saving money. They didn't build, not just in case of that reactor, but in general, they wouldn't build the concrete structures above the reactors that would protect the population, the environment, if something went wrong. So problems with the construction of the reactors, trying to save money. And then there was this myth of the safety of the reactor that was really common for the entire nuclear industry, was shared by highest party and political leadership like Gorbachev. Gorbachev, when interviewed, said that, well, he was shocked to hear what happened because the designers, including the president of the Academy of Sciences of the Soviet Union, assured him that the reactors were as safe as samovars and could be put in the middle of the Red Square.
When it comes to the disaster and what ultimately happened, is that something that could happen at any nuclear reactor, or was there something that was especially derelict in this case that caused the catastrophe?
Well, there were a number of things that were particular for Chernobyl and Soviet nuclear industry, and one of them was the particular type of reactor that was used, the so-called water graphite reactor. The reactors that are used in this country, that used in Western Europe, are so-called water-water reactors, where water used as a coolant and also as a moderator of the nuclear reaction. The graphite thing was bad because if it catches fire, that happened at Chernobyl. You have the reactor on fire, and most of the radiation that escaped the reactor of Chernobyl escaped through this burning of the graphite inside of the reactor, inside of the active zone of the reactor. So there were certain things particular to Chernobyl. But then there were others that I'm afraid are common for nuclear industries all over the world, including in this country. And that was the case that, okay, you need to meet production targets. You're in the business of saving, and the safety culture very often, or safety as such, becomes secondary. This is especially true for the development of nuclear energy industry outside of the so-called first world. So now we have 21 reactors under construction in China, 9 in Russia, 2 in Egypt, and you deal in many cases with the safety culture non-existent. In the Middle East, with the first generation of nuclear engineers, so that was the case at Chernobyl, where people just don't have enough experience. And I'm afraid that things like Chernobyl can happen in the future, unfortunately.
You know, if you look at the timeline, and it's amazing, as you say, the explosion, the first explosion, April 26, 1986, then the plant eventually closes in 2000, and isn't that a really long time to keep going, of the plant to continue operation in some fashion?
Well, it is generally long, maybe for Chernobyl, given that what happened there and the idea that those reactors were unsafe, and indeed they were unsafe. But generally for the life of the reactor, it's not a long period of time. Most of the reactors that we have in this country are much older than the one that was built in Chernobyl. So those things serve for a long period of time, but of course, as the older they become, the more attention they require, and the more effort and resources should go into that. With Chernobyl, it was also a very interesting story of basically, in that particular case, Ukraine. The reactor was built in Ukraine. A society as a whole falling in love with nuclear energy, then learning to hate nuclear energy, and then basically change mind again once the economic conditions after the former Soviet Union became really, really horrible. The country was relying more and more on nuclear energy. Even today, 50% of all electrical energy in Ukraine comes from nuclear power plants.
Tell us about the shelter that has been placed over the damaged reactor. The completion of this happened at the end of last year. Is that something that was long overdue? And ultimately, what does that shelter us from?
Well, the idea to build the shelter of a reactor was there already immediately in the first weeks after explosion. So the engineers, Soviet engineers at that time, looked at different options, decided that they would build a shelter. They constructed the first one before the end of the year 1986, at enormous expense, at enormous sacrifice in terms of the health of people who were building it, but they completed it. But it was a temporary thing, and already in the next 2 years, they started to have all sorts of problems. It was too heavy. The walls were not, there were cracks appearing, and so on and so forth. And for the last maybe 20 years, there is a project going on of the construction of a new, much better shelter. The idea is, of course, not to allow the radiation to continue poisoning atmosphere. Chernobyl produced the amount of radiation that equivalent to 500 Hiroshima bombs. But all of that came as a result of escaping of only 5% of the fuel that was in the reactor. So 95% of that stuff is still there, and the shelter is there to help us protect Europe, the world as a whole, from that 95% still remaining there. And this is a multi-billion international project led by a French construction company called Navarca. And they were supposed to build it years ago, but there are delays, delays, and delays. And again, you mentioned last year was really the time when they were supposed to complete. They haven't completed it yet. Now the new deadline is the end of this year. Reason for that is still very high levels of radiation, which are hazardous for the workers and engineers who work in that construction.
So what damage has been done as a result of this project being really delayed for more than 30 years?
Well, we hope that the additional damage was not done. It's just that it can happen any moment if the old structures collapse. So that is the real danger. And most of the damage was done within the first, I would say, month after the explosion. And if your listeners, for example, can go online and Google the map of Chernobyl fallout, they will find out that it's not just the territory of Ukraine or Belarus or the Soviet Union that were affected, but also Austria and areas in northern Italy. And the first news about rising levels of radiation came from Scandinavia, from Sweden. So depending on the direction of the rain, of the direction of the wind and where the rain was falling, that's where most of this kind of a dirty spots are till today. But most of that, it's the result of things that got out of the reactor in April and May of 1986.
Harvard professor Sergei Pohy is the author of Chernobyl, The History of a Nuclear Catastrophe, and he is our guest on the roundtable this morning. You write in the book that children were affected the most by Chernobyl and the radioactive fallout. 3,000 cases of thyroid cancer registered in the 1990s in Belarus and the Ukraine in the population of children under 14 years of age. I found that stunning.
It is. It is. And again, the good thing is that those cases, they were detected in time, and most of them are treatable. Again, the figures are even higher, some figures up to 4,000 cases of thyroid cancer. This is above the norm, above what is there normally. And that is one of things where everyone agrees, but most medical doctors, scientists, are still struggling to figure out what the overall impact of Chernobyl was on the health of people involved. There were 600,000 people who were shipped into the so-called exclusion zone to deal with the reactor in the first few years. And the figures of lives that were shortened by Chernobyl are really anywhere between 6,000 to 90,000. We don't know yet. Most of our knowledge and understanding of the ways how radiation affects human beings comes from explosions like the one that took place, dropping the bomb on Hiroshima or Nagasaki. So it's a huge amount of radiation being released in a short period of time. Chernobyl, it's the other way around. It's smaller dosages, but going over years and decades and hundreds of thousands of years. They're saying that the exclusion zone will not be fully safe for at least another 200-300 years. The plutonium-239, it's a small percentage of what was released by explosion, but its half-life is 24,000 years. So again, the Chernobyl unfortunately will stay with us for long, long, long period of time, and then with our children and grandchildren.
Given what we know and the fact of what we learned as a result of Chernobyl, we're still a long way from being able to tame an issue with a nuclear reactor. I guess we learned this a few years ago in Fukushima in Japan. So have we learned fundamental lessons? What have we learned, and what lessons have we yet to learn to keep this from ever happening again?
Well, immediately after the reactor, measures were taken to deal with deficiencies of that particular type of reactors. The secrecy that surrounded Soviet nuclear energy was gone, so now it's much more integrated into the international community. So all these things are good. And what we heard was, okay, Chernobyl happened, it's terrible, we learned the lessons, nothing of that kind would happen again. And then we got Fukushima, and it would be easier to say, okay, this is Mother Nature that interfered. But it's people who decided to put the plants like the ones that were in Fukushima in the area that is where earthquakes are taking place or the tsunami are possible. With Chernobyl, they built the nuclear power plant at the beginning of the high reaches of a number of rivers, including Dnieper. And on Dnieper alone, 30 million people depend on that. So this is there are altogether three major nuclear disasters in world history so far. So Three Mile Island is number one, chronologically then Chernobyl and then Fukushima. And each time it kind of hits from a different side, from a different angle. The only lesson over there, apart from immediate lessons to be learned, is that, well, nuclear energy is inherently a very, very dangerous source of energy. Today we have things like terrorism. Today we have things like the computer viruses. Last year, one of those computer viruses disabled the system of the safety system in this new shelter at Chernobyl. So there are all sorts of dangers that maybe were not there even 10, 15 years ago. Now we are dealing with them. So one couldn't be too cautious when it comes to nuclear energy.
One of the things that you obviously have to think about is that this is a world issue. This is an international issue. And as these new nuclear projects crop up, this is something that everyone has to be concerned about. In reading your book, it certainly doesn't seem as though the world community fully understands or grasps as with the rise of nationalism around the world that catastrophes like this can happen, and not everybody is anywhere near on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. I can't agree more. And look at Chernobyl, the country that built it, the country that kept secrecy over its aftermath. That country is not on the map of the world anymore. It's gone. So who at the end of the day owns today the problem of Chernobyl? It's the world community, the G7 countries that produced funds for the construction of this new shelter. The argument that I'm trying to make, okay, if at the end of the day it's the international community that owns the problem, maybe it would be only fair if the international community would be much more involved from the very beginning, from choosing the place to the construction to the way how the nuclear energy is run. I don't think we can put back the gene of nuclear energy into the bottle. This is impossible. But again, the nuclear the international oversight and international control should be strengthened, and it's easy to say, but it's difficult to implement because we have here the sovereignty of independent countries and states, and the rising nationalism and populism. So it's true now all over the world, from Europe to this country, and this is additional challenge.
The name of the book is Chernobyl: The History of a Nuclear Catastrophe. It is published by Basic Books. Serhii Polyi, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much. Again, Serhii Polyi's book is Chernobyl: The History of a Nuclear Catastrophe. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.